Welcome to the DBS Films Podcast, a behind-the-scenes look into making indie films. Learn from DBS Films about their process, tips, and fun stories that all come with making multiple movies a reality.
Hey everybody, welcome to DBS Films Podcast. My name is Kellen, with me as always is my brother Brendan, and together we make movies with DBS Films. Today we're going to go into part one of a scene-by-scene breakdown of our second movie, The Invited. In this part, we're basically going to just take a look at what we liked, what we might do differently, and just an overall breakdown of the movie. If you haven't seen it yet, it is on Amazon Prime. If you're a DBS super fan, you can also see it as well. Be sure, again, if you want to be part of the process that we make movies for our fans and with our fans, and our Discord community is the place to be, so definitely take a look at it as well. On top of that, we do have our newest film, The Haunting of the Murder House, is on Amazon, and if you want to go ahead, take a look, rent and review it, it would mean the world to us. So hopping into part one of The Invited, I have to say I absolutely love The Invited. I think this is one of my favorites to watch. I don't think quality wise it's up there with like The Devil in the Room and Morgan Estate, so I would rank those higher in The Hateful Eight, but this is like, I love watching this because it to me is a prime example of what we kind of say, where it's like, don't, you know, you can be good and you can be bad, but don't be boring. And I just think overall it's one of my favorites, and plus I love the concept and I want to redo it. So that's my overall feel for this movie. What do you kind of think of The Invited before we hop in?
Yeah, I mean, I love the concept. I think the concept's absolutely excellent. It's probably one of my favorite concepts that we have. Even out of the hundreds of scripts I've written, I still always come back to The Invited because I do think it's a really, really cool story. And I think as far as like The Invited that we made, I see it all the time. This is a movie that a lot of independent filmmakers kind of fall into the trap of making. It's the movie in your head seems perfect. It seems like it's going to be great. There's going to be a lot of cool stuff in there, and you feel confident that you can make this movie. And this all comes from a place of just not having a lot of experience. It's pretty much an indie filmmaker trap. So you can listen to what we're trying to say. You'll watch the movie and you'll see kind of like what I'm talking about. It's just too big of a concept. It requires too many things to actually execute it properly that have to go right. And you have to have a really, really good screenplay. If you don't have a really good screenplay, when we wrote this, we were still beginners. It's just a very difficult movie to pull off. So not only do you have to have good screenplay, it's a very technical movie. You have to have really good acting. And I do think you have to have a lot of almost like special effects or kind of cool stuff in there to really push this along. This just to me is a typical indie movie where it turns out to be like 2 hours long. It's very boring. It's very slow. The beats that you think hit do not hit. And, you know, it just turns into a very boring, flat movie. And I just see it a lot in the indie filmmaking world. I see a lot of filmmakers kind of try and get a movie like this or a similar concept. And, you know, looking back on it with, you know, 11 movies under my belt, it's just very difficult to pull this concept off or pull off a similar kind of movie like The Invited.
Oh yeah, and that kind of led me exactly into what I was going to mention after that first was, you know, it was one of those movies where I think it was just the textbook of, you know, Child of Summer. We just had no clue the filmmaking process. I completely agree in the sense of, you know, it's one of my favorite ideas. I think really just kind of needed to amp up the drugs with special effects every once in a while for party scenes and just make it really a story about, you know, do you continue your boring job or do you enjoy this crazy cult lifestyle? I think a lot of people can identify with that. That being said, it's a story I would never touch without, you know, $1 million budget. It's just something where I wouldn't even entertain the idea of doing it because there is a lot that's required that you just can't shave it off for the story. You know, you can't end up changing the story enough because of the core elements to fit within the indie budgets that we work in. So, you know, that to me, I think it was something with us going into it, and it was just a whole bunch of landmines. And I, more than anything, am surprised that this movie got finished. I mean, I think of all of our movies, just because it was our second movie, we had filmed Gone, and Gone was only 30 minutes long. This movie comes in at 55 minutes, mainly because it's what we could scrap together. But just because of the sheer amount of actors and location and everything, I think it ends up, you know, just being incredible that we ended up pulling it together. And I also think that's one of the reasons why I do enjoy it a lot, is because of all of the different things with it. It has this weird production value to it, which makes it interesting. So do you want to kind of really quickly talk about how such a nightmare this was in the sense of execution? And I really do feel like we were just on like a tight wire the entire time, and somehow we like managed to get across.
Yeah. After how easy Gone was, you know, we try to make this movie. It's a very grand movie. There's a lot of technical shots in there. We had a new crew, and you know, I think one of the problems with working with a new crew or just indie crew in general is they're just gonna say yes to you. Like, they're gonna be like, yeah, sure, totally, we can do this, we can make this happen, not a problem. And that comes from a place of, number one, they probably want to get paid. They don't want you to be like, no, we can't do this, and you scrap the project or go find someone else. But I also think it comes from a place of, they don't know. You don't know how long and how difficult some of these things are, because that just comes from experience. You know, after doing all these movies, having worked on the cinematography myself, I have a very good idea of how long it's going to take to shoot something. So it comes back to, I can make a proper schedule, and scheduling, I think, is 90% of the battle. To get a movie finished. And I think that we just had a lot of people who had not a lot of experience on this set. They were just saying yes to everything. And we bit off way more than we can chew in the amount of time that we had to do it, with the amount of actors that we had to work with the amount of locations that we had to put together. You know, Kel said it came in at 55 minutes. And I think this screenplay was super long. It had to be 120 pages, probably one of our longer screenplays. But we just had to constantly cut. I remember the first day we started shooting, immediately we were cutting scenes. And you never want to be in a place where you're cutting scenes, because it's, you want to really leave that up to the editing room. You want to make those decisions in editing. If you're cutting a lot of stuff while you're shooting, it is not a good sign, because you don't know if what you're cutting is actually good or really relevant to the story. And that was pretty much the... you know, the story behind The Invited is, we had a screenplay that should have been probably an hour, 45 minutes, and it came in at 55 minutes just because of how we had to cut everything together and how we had to scrap. And then we went back and cut more in editing because the pacing was so poor in this movie. So, you know, overall, it's pretty much a miracle that this thing got made. And it almost feels more like a trailer as opposed to a full-length movie, just because of how much we had to cut it down.
Yeah, I really just, again, feel like this is such a prime example of like what really ends up happening. That being said, you know, let's hop right into it. So I think, honestly, Gone and Invited had very good intro. I mean, same thing for Unseen and Whitlow as well, too. But I think right from the beginning, and I think this probably comes from your marketing background with the books or whatnot, is we understand a hook. So in the scene, it's our intro girl. She's running through the woods. You know, she ends up hopefully getting someone's attention when she finds them. But then we find out that person has a knife and is going to kill her. So really quick, super easy, 49 seconds into it. You immediately know it's a thriller. Something bad's going on. What do you think of that intro?
Yeah, the whole intro, this was a pickup scene that we had to do because we didn't get it on principle. And this was probably the hardest day of shooting I've ever had. To get this intro done, it was about 32 hours. So we did the intro and the climax in one day in the woods with very little power. And this took 32 hours to get done. It was just absolute nightmare. That being said, it turned out pretty well. The actual intro that we actually had written was about 4 or 5 minutes. We filmed it, and I looked back at it and I said, this is boring, this is stupid, it just did not flow well with the movie. So we cut most of it out. When the girl gets caught, there's actually like 2 or 3 minutes of dialogue between the characters wearing the mask, and it just, it didn't look good, it didn't sound good. And I was like, people are going to turn this off. So once again, we listened to feedback and we took a 3 or 4 minute intro and really cut it down to under a minute, which I really think, you know, after looking at all our movies, the sweet spot is just for an intro, you don't want to make a mistake, and it's better to just be quick and fast and get it done as quickly as possible to get people to actually watch the movie, because you don't want to give them too much, or you don't want to have it look too low budget to where they just turn it off. And you don't want your actors to be saying a lot of stuff either. I think the intros that work really well are the ones that are quick, that are easy, and they end with a bang. And I think this intro works pretty well. Obviously, it wasn't what we wanted in our heads when we wrote it, but I think after editing it, it gives off the mysterious vibe. It hits with a kind of a punch, and I think it gives you enough to at least be interested in the movie.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's quick, right to the pace there. You know, I will agree. I think we are kind of learning. There's a balance to it, but, you know, the more you do show, the more issues you can present yourself. And I think we're learning that, you know, as we progress, specifically with the Murder House and the Shapeshifter now, because, you know, there's the balance with the Whitlow House, which is one of the better intros, but then you have, like, the Unseen, which is just pure speed like this. So there's a balance, but overall, you know, it's good to go. The Invited there. And then this is just, to me, where everything just starts shining. Like, I just love watching this movie again and again, because there's just so much going on. Again, this was a very grand thing. There's a lot of characters. There's a lot of locations. So we cut to the party, the going away party for Blake. And basically it is in your office building. And you know, it looks really good. The sets that we were able to secure, those were just really, really good in quality there. So, you know, right away you almost kind of get like the Room vibe a bit, because it's not perfectly filmed in the sense of lighting and things like that, so you can tell, but it is you know, something unique and it catches your eye. So, you know, they start going, we get a little bit of backstory. The backstory is Brad looking sad when Blake's about to leave, so you kind of get that emotional connection there. But it sets up the first point of, you know, what do you do if like your only real friend's leaving and then you're going to end up meeting someone else? So for character development, I think, you know, this scene and then them going to the rooftop and talking, which is about 2 minutes. We got some Orlando sunsets and skylines and everything there. Really just, I think, one of our better character developments, in my opinion, aside from the fact that the audio got pretty messed up on the rooftop, which we'll talk about.
I think this honestly is one of our better character development scenes. And honestly, there's a lot of things we do right in this movie, but we didn't have the ability to actually film it properly. This is a great scene to go from essentially a girl getting murdered into, I believe they start saying happy birthday or he's a jolly good fellow or some kind of happy upbeat song with the image of a bright cake. It's a great transition. It's probably one of our better transitions. We just didn't film it properly. That whole thing should have been light or very bright, very well lit. Everyone should have been over the top happy. And then, you know, you have Brad in the corner and it should have been like very corporate office-y. And we just didn't pull it off. The way it was filmed didn't kind of give that portrayal. But since, you know, we wrote the thing, that's kind of like what I wanted, is like, this guy's miserable in this corporate job and everything's kind of super, super over the top fake. So I think you can quickly understand Curtis's character. It's like, hey, look, this guy's in a dead-end job, and now his best friend's leaving, and the only reason he might have stayed in that job is because his best friend is, you know, there with him. So I think between that and them going up to the roof, I think you get really good character development. I think it shows both characters really well. The dialogue is not very good. I think the dialogue could have been cleaned up a lot more, could have been cut back a lot more. I think the character complains, as instead of being his motivation should have been, you know, upset that his friend's leaving. But I think there's enough in there to, you know, make you understand who these two characters are, because the next scene is so crucial that you understand this guy's kind of desperate and he's kind of down on his luck. And I think we kind of do that. Do we do it well? Not really. I think it could have been shot better. The dialogue could have been better, but you know, the main principle stuff is there. Like, that is this part of the screenplay works and we just didn't execute it on a technical level to really make you feel for these characters.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's smooth. And again, I think it just comes down to the production of having these different locations. You know, a skyline is good. Like, it just, it looks interesting. Things are happening versus a lot of our later movies and a lot of indie films is if you're in the same location, you kind of get doled out to it. So speaking of which, you know, they go from, hey, let's go out on the town. He's like, okay, sure, we'll go get a drink. And then he bails on him. So poor Brad. And he's at a bar, which again, you know, a bar scene, really, really good. I think, you know, overall, it just shows you really how important a set is, again, in my opinion. Like, this whole downtown scene that we ended up putting together, just, it looks very interesting. But, you know, specifically the bar, just, it really pops on screen. It looks good. I think our montage is pretty laughable here in the sense of like them just talking and whatnot compared to, I think our montage is now where we understand it's speed. You know, we probably have them playing darts or moving around. So you want to talk about the whole meeting of Sandy in the bar and what you kind of felt about it?
Yeah, I think once again, it was, you know, a beautiful set. I just think we kind of dropped the ball in like shooting it. And I think the dialogue is kind of almost over the top. And I think that's like my big problem with this, with The Invited, was that I like the characters. I like the script. I like the character development. The dialogue was just really hard. And we learned a lot about dialogue in this one, as far as, you know, just trying to be a little bit more natural and not as robotic. I remember, you know, working with the actors and we're like, all right, look, you have to say exactly what the script says. Which created an even more robotic performance. And I think it's just like, if you watch the dialogue, it's not natural dialogue. Nobody really says this kind of stuff. A lot of dialogue in this movie is like inside jokes or references to other movies that just people don't talk like that. And I think it kind of takes the viewer out of the overall movie when, you know, right now you're supposed to feel bad for Brad. His best friend just bailed on him. He's down on his luck. He probably has a job he doesn't like. You know, he's supposed to break up with his girlfriend or been through a breakup. And we show that by him deleting photos on the phone, which never makes no sense really and doesn't come across well at all. And then, you know, this hot chick's supposed to come in and like change his whole night. And so the pieces are there. It's just the execution was very poor. As far as the montage, I think the montage is fine. The music is extremely important. And the music we used for this was not very good. And you kind of get like a cheesy vibe to it. But, you know, all we need to do is showing like they're having a good time and there's time passage, which I thought we did. So I think up until this point, the structure is good for this movie. But I mean, it's just, I don't think we executed as well as we probably could have.
Yeah. I mean, I completely agree. And that's exactly what I was going to actually mention in like the next scene where they're, you know, out basically finishing the character development in the lore dump where they're out on the table in the alley. And that to me is the highlight of just the dialogue being like that, I think is probably some of our worst dialogue ever. Just in the sense, because of, I think, when we were first doing it, you almost try and think that like, hey, what's the specific, like, you know, driving point of this dialogue, and everything needs to have a purpose, or each line is incredibly witty and whatnot, when like, you really just want to try and get through the conversation in a smooth manner versus having a little victory in every single line that, because people don't talk like that. And it just ends up being really, really, again, fun to watch for me, because it's like, oh man, like what she describes, what they do for Holdenbrook is just amazing. And that was like a few revisions down too. So it's interesting to see. But you kind of get a little element that something sneaky is going on, because she goes away and she talks on the cell phone and it's like, oh, what's happening here? Remember, we originally had it where like Hunter would be in the alley, just again to kind of show there's some suspicions there. But overall, they had a good date. Brad walks home, he texts her, and then he falls asleep. And then he gets a text back, and basically she calls him and they end up setting up a time there. So I think progressing this honestly is really smooth. Like him, you know, waking up, he gets a call from her. We just have her voice over it. Then he calls Blake. We cut to Blake, which I would always recommend cutting to different location just because you can get more locations, but pretty smooth. You know, Blake already plant some seeds about it being suspicious. Brad is like, nah, it's great, we'll be fine, come out to the party tonight. And that's how we get him. So how do you kind of feel about that progression there? Because I mean, pretty smooth for over the phone. Again, dialogue's a little bit rough, but I mean, that's basically what you're going to see. I would say we probably missed a bit when it came to it being scary that she's having a phone call there. Like I would say we probably add another beat. But then when it comes to just progressing to the party, I think that's a very smooth transition that we have for the next day.
Yeah, I think the outdoor conversation is just very difficult. The stuff that they're saying is very robotic, and it also repeats a lot of stuff. Like she talks about Holdenbrook and the society that she's in, but we're going to go see them in like the next 10 minutes. So you don't really need to explain them because we're going to show the viewer later on. So there's a lot of dialogue stuff in here that just like is repetitive. You're repeating the same things. You're telling the viewer instead of showing them. So I think that was like a huge issue with a lot of this stuff. And then it needed a heavier beat here. The cell phone doesn't cut it. I think that maybe she should have met someone from the cult that night that was like trying to bring her back in that didn't like Curtis. But there needed to be like a scarier, more intense beat to make him be like, whoa, this girl's perfect. What the heck was that? And he kind of like chalks it up. And that these cell phone conversations, which are plagued all the way through this movie, just don't get it done. And I'd really avoid cell phone conversations if you have the opportunity. Just because they don't add any tension and they kind of just break up the scene. So I would have either had someone from the cult come in there and make a big deal, or just someone trying to like get with her or something, like some kind of aggression tension scene needed to be right here. It doesn't really need to be related to the cult. It could have been just a random drunk person, but there needed to be some kind of tension, some kind of beat, some kind of escalation here. And because this is like one where we missed right now. And then him going to sleep and then talking to his buddy is good because it gets his buddy back into the movie. So I think it flows well. I think if you just put a stronger beat there, I think you would have had a better, like a more involved viewer at this point. Cause I think I'm interested in the movie, but once again, we talk about, you know, making sure the viewer understands what kind of movie they're watching. So we had a very thriller horror open. And now the next 10, 15 minutes of this movie have been sort of romance or like buddy kind of comedy kind of movie. And I think that kind of messes up, you know, the horror people might be looking at turning this off since there was no beat there. And now we're back in the morning. We're getting more character development. It's light out. They're probably like, hey, this isn't a very scary movie.
Yeah, I completely agree. This is because, again, when we were talking about Gone, you know, we mentioned you'll miss a beat. And I think this is another textbook case of just missing on so many beats, just really underestimating what's scary, what's not scary, what's suspenseful, what's not. And I mean, that kind of, to me, you know, they're talking and they're going, you know, really, we needed to hit on that alley. You needed to hit in some degree on that alley, would have been way more intense. But then they have develop it and then they get to the party again. You know, this could be something we often talk about in like the 3.0 or the 2.0 and 3.0 versions of this. The scary parts wouldn't really be scary as much as just visually pleasing. So, you know, cool, fun sequences, things like that, party scenes and stuff like that. So they get to the party once again. You know, thanks to my good friend Yanel Cohen for providing his house, because like, man, that helps out so much. Having that type of mansion area really adds a ton of production value. And then from there, you know, having multiple groups of people, which this is, again, you know, it takes up a lot of time to get a scene like this here, but I'd say the beginning party is pretty decent. You know, I think again, it just highlights, we don't really know how to film stuff. because you're kind of going from like the point where when they enter and they walk around, you do have not really a montage, but there's just so much more I think you could have done, even when you just looked like what we're doing with Shapeshifter now and those montage scenes, just the way that we would do a party, especially if we had that type of location. You know, we had a pool. I probably would have liked, there would have been a lot more different that we would have done for that party location, which is kind of a shame. But that being said, this is why you have to make movies. You have to do this or else you don't even know. You know, we thought we were doing what we could do in our head, but unless you've done it before, you just have no clue.
Yeah, it's just what you need to do. You know, as a director, I thought, you know, I communicated properly, like we wanted a live party, fun atmosphere. And, you know, the DP either just didn't understand that from my end, or he didn't have the technical ability to actually shoot it. So we got something very flat. You know, we shot with the tripod. We have just basic setups, where if I were to do this myself, I would have started with like a giant oneer following like a solo cup or something, or just Brad around the party. You know, people are giving him handshakes, or, you know, it's just a very like tight knit community that could all be done with a oneer. Then I would just montage it up. You know, you go to the pool, you go to them playing drinking games. You just can make it much more quick, fast paced cuts. And then you have like the card scene in there, and then you go back to more montages and just give you like a better idea of like how grand this party is, how cool this party is, how cool everyone at the party is. So I think it's just a way of like having the understanding of how to shoot this properly and get really the feel of a very tight knit community, a really fun party. And you do need a little bit more of a budget with this one, but I do think that with our budget, we could probably pull it off a lot better than we did. The location was fine, and I think that's half the battle. But I think it was just flat. I think that's the main thing with this movie is we did a lot of things well. We have a lot of really cool scenes in here. We just didn't have the knowledge and the experience to actually film them properly and get like a really cool scene out of this, because this could be a really, really cool scene. It could add a lot of production value to the movie. And instead we got something that's very flat, something very boring. And now you're probably 15 to 20 minutes into this movie with only the hook, the intro hook, as something crazy happening. And, you know, just a lot of other stuff that's just kind of very slow paced. You have some weird dialogue. You finally come to this scene where it's supposed to be more upbeat, more action paced. And it's just shot on a tripod with wide shots.
Yeah, I think it really could be much more dynamic with what we had there. Just for, you know, how we know that or understand the filming process now. I will say this kind of starts just the amazing dialogue again to some degree. I like absolutely love so many lines here. The Sandy special. Also, one of the bigger ones is like, I love how just how everyone hates Blake, like so blatantly obvious. Like it's just, again, it's one of those things where I think it's just textbook indie filmmaking. You know, we see it all the time in movies now that we look at, that we watch. And I think until you've actually done it yourself, you don't know. Because I mean, in the moment, in the time, we thought everything was, you know, hey, this is great, this is exactly what it looks like. And it's until you get to the end editing process that you understand, okay, this is actually a little bit rougher than I expected. Okay, don't do this. And then you learn for the next films not to do those things. So I think another thing that, again, we just talk about where a lot of things miss, I think, again, we miss on the knife scare. So this was one I remember when we were doing it, I was always kind of like, you know, to me, the alley one made sense a lot. You know, a lot of the other scares made sense. This was one where I was always kind of like, what are we going to do? You know, I thought it was like, you know, just something more intense there, but it's just the way it was done with the TV, the bed's kind of there. It's just, it's odd. And I think what it was hastily put together, because at this point in time, we were so far behind on schedule already that we're just like, let's get it together. Let's get this film. It'll be something. And then we'll get them out of here. Because I remember it was probably like, I think like 4 a.m. at night when we were just kind of getting to that very last scene. And we had been like, yeah, we'll be out of here by midnight.
Yeah, I think that I remember going back when writing this screenplay. and originally it was like he's supposed to walk in on some kind of like crazy ritual, like someone was supposed to be like chained up, or there's supposed to be candles and like a demonic circle, and it looks almost like someone's about to get murdered. And then he goes out of there and he's like freaking out, because he's seen like this almost like demonic cult like thing. So it's supposed to be a very impactful thing. The two things that came up with that were, number one, we didn't have the budget to necessarily pull it off. And that's a lot of set design that we needed. And number two, at that point, if you actually saw that, like, I think it kind of messed with Curtis's motivations. If like I saw that, I'd be out of there immediately. So I think we dialed it back, and I think that was a mistake. I think we should have probably kept it there or used a little bit more brain power to try and find something that really impacts the viewer. That's like, hey, this is something really crazy. There's something really weird going on here. Because I think that adds to Brad's character of, all right, look, these people are weird, but they like me. They're giving me money, and this chick is really hot. So I think like that's where we needed to go, and we just never pulled it off properly. And it's a good indie, you know, learning lesson is just, if ever in doubt, always just go for the one that's like scaled up, the scare that's going to be more intense. Never go back. It's just always better to do something crazy and wild that has impact, even if it does mess with your character's motivations a little bit. It always turns out like less aggressive than what you think is going to happen. So, you know, we had something in the script that was crazy and more aggressive, and we toned it back, and it turns into just a flat beat. So looking back on it, I would have done something really wild and just spent more time trying to figure out a way for Brad to rationalize that, even if he had to go get Sandy and bring her back and like the room's cleaned up or something like that, or, you know, there's no one really in there. Could have been a way to handle it, but you needed to have something hit hard here. And the problem is like, we missed the alleyway beat, and now we missed this beat, and this movie is pretty much dead in the water. I guarantee you after that one, or after this party night, people probably turn this movie off.
Oh yeah. Like I'm fully engaged in this movie simply because it reminds me of like The Room, you know, in the sense of like, you're just like, what's going to happen next? Not in the sense of my engaged in it and like, oh, what's going to scare or happen from there. So, you know, I think it is the case of, missing on those beats literally reclassified the genre. So we start off with intro, missing on all those beats. You're now just in this weird like friendship type thing with like this cult kind of there, but like the stakes are just invisible. So then we have again another wake up scene. And I think this just goes back to like, or what we've seen with our writing is like timelines condense so much more now when we're like making these films and these movies. And we just have a lot of wake up, go to sleep, wake up. And I mean, it. I think it has a place there, but I think, you know, the bigger thing, and we've talked about it before, is you have different, you know, outfits you have to deal with when you have multiple days. But to me, I think it's just kind of like a pacing, almost like a handicap or something, just because you don't have another way to push the story in a meaningful way. Instead, you just kind of go with a generic wake up, and then they talk about how last night was. So they wake up, we have another phone call conversation, they cut back and forth, then we have the hallway talk with Blake. So I mean, basically I will say the plot mechanic of pacing and moving the story forward is still really good, in the sense that we have one person pulling Brad one way, which is Sandy, and you have someone pulling Blake the other way. And I think that's what I really enjoy in stories. And I think when we watch something like Girl in Cabin 13, when you don't have two sides pulling at least to one way, or two factors pulling on someone, I think it gets a little bit bland. So I think we hit that, but again, just we filmed it incorrectly and just the dialogue made it suffer a little bit. What do you kind of think about, you know, them waking up the next day, talking to Sandy, talking to Blake, and then progressing?
Well, I mean, you're looking like, once again, the dialogue is a lot. There's a lot of issues with the dialogue in this movie. And it's not just the dialogue isn't like saying things that are really bad and the lines are really bad. They're having dialogue conversations for no reason at all. A lot of this stuff could just be shown. And there's really no reason for him to wake up in his bed or wherever, because I think they left the house. There's no reason to have this whole wake up morning scene unless he was going to his work. Other than that, I would just had him stay at the house, and then he could have spent more time with the weird, creepy cult. And a lot of the dialogue stuff that we're doing in these conversations could have been done at that house. The house is cool. Play with, always focus on like your strengths. Having that house was a great asset, and we should have spent more time there instead of Brad's like lonely, boring room with, you know, monotone walls. So, you know, what he's saying to Sandy, what he's saying to Blake is just, we've seen it already. You don't need to, talk the viewer and tell the viewer what they just saw. We have to find more creative ways to, you know, move the plot forward other than repeating what people have seen. And so I think like that's a big problem with this movie, is the characters are repeating things constantly and we're not moving the dialogue forward, the movie forward with the dialogue, and the dialogue's just very, very awkward, which kind of creates a trifecta of just, it's very difficult to have a good performance with this kind of dialogue in the screenplay.
Yep. So to quickly highlight, I think this is textbook mistakes that you make as an indie filmmaker. You miss the upbeats and your downbeats just drag. And I think you see it all the time. We're going to go ahead now, and basically we're halfway through the movie. So, you know, they get back and then we meet Dimitri and everything. But I wanted to kind of end this first part by just discussing what we would do halfway point to the movie now. And I think, you know, again, I absolutely love this concept, because to me, the equation that it is, you know, would you join a cult if it meant you got to escape the tedium of life? That I think most people, especially, you know, right out of college, kind of understand that, you know, this is work, this is the 9 to 5. And I think it would be that balance of his work would be really shitty and the cult would be really amazing, to the point where, you know, I'd like the audience to be like, okay, well, you know, I could see that, you know, I could see doing that and following along. So I think the intro, I would keep essentially similar in that sense too. You know, I think we can finally up it with like having actually good costumes and productions and things like that. So I'd have like that kind of being hunted element to it. I love cutting the party, like you said, I'd keep that all the same. I think the one thing that we mentioned that we never really pulled off that I think is a fantastic element is the social dating app element of it. So just, it could be anyone that you meet on the dating app, because that always opens the question of, you know, who did you match with, what is this person? I think that's good. I think you just improve the style of the downtown and then you improve the party. I mean, I think it's basically there. I think you maybe have one or two scenes of the work really being terrible. Like I'd probably have the boss character just be absolutely horrible, just really lay on that character of being just a useless middle manager, or even like the CEO or whatnot of the company, just a complete dick. And I think you would maybe pepper those in there, but other than that, I'd basically keep that structure the same. We just gotta hit on the up and down.
Yeah, I think it's all in there. I think just have a faster paced intro hook. I'd have more cuts. I'd have her holding a torch. I'd have her running faster, more aggressive music in the beginning. And then I'd have her get murdered in like a much more cooler, mysterious way with more blood, guts, would be much, you know, more preferred. For the office scene, I like the cake scene. I think we just have him like super depressed. And then, like you said, I would have the boss bring Curtis into his office and just be like a huge douchebag to him, just chew him out and just get really aggressive to him, make it seem like, you know, Curtis is just absolutely miserable that he has to work with this guy. And then I would just go straight, instead of going to the roof, I go straight to the bar scene, because once again, we got to play with our assets. That place is really cool. And I'd have him sitting there drinking with Blake, and Blake's like, hey, like, you know, don't worry about what the boss is telling him. They could talk a little bit about his career. And then Blake gets to leave. And then he doesn't stay with Curtis. He's like, hey, look, you know, let's have another round or let's go out. And he's like, no, I got a wife and kids. I got to leave. He leaves. And then, you know, you bring up like Tinder or the social media, you know, dating app kind of thing, where, you know, Curtis has a good buzz going, but he's not going to go up and talk to people. So he's just kind of messing around with this. He matches with Sandy and then they meet up. I think that's very solid. I think it just needs to be shot a little bit better. The dialogue needs to be honed up a little bit more. But I think you have to have either a cult member or the ex-boyfriend at the end of the night there to really give it a pop, to really give it kind of like, ooh, there's something weird going on here with this chick. I think that's like the big motivation, the big goal you have to accomplish there is like, this chick is perfect. I love her. She's great. But there's something weird with either the crowd she hangs out with or, you know, a weird interaction with a person that's aggressive. It needs to be aggressive. Curtis needs to feel threatened, but because he doesn't know, he's kind of like a passive character. He doesn't know how to actually handle the situation. So then it gets very awkward. And then like, I would just segue quickly to the party the next night, just amp that up, make it a lot cooler, a lot better. And I think you just have him stay in the house the next morning where he can actually interact with Dimitri and the other cult characters to just build the plot a little bit more. But I think the pieces are there. We didn't execute on them properly. And I think we just got to kind of amp them up a little bit more because this is a thriller movie. I don't think it's necessarily a horror movie, but still as a thriller, thrillers need to have tension and suspense. And I don't think we had enough tension or suspense because you have to, if you're not utilizing pop scares or aggressive scare moments to keep the audience on edge, you really got to make sure that thriller and that suspense is very thick all the way throughout. So people are like, all right, what's going to happen next? What's going to happen next? And I don't think we did that with this one, but if I were to remake it, that would be like my focus is to make sure that we're peppering the audience with a lot of suspense and a lot of weird stuff and a lot of like aggression and just like you're kind of creating this mix of just this crazy kind of like plot that slowly gets thicker and thicker until you just can't stop watching because you got to see like almost like a slow motion train wreck. Like, you know, something bad is going to happen to this guy. You can't turn it off. I think like Better Call Saul does a great job of this. And I think that that's kind of like the tension that we need to capture and just hold for as long as we possibly can.
Yeah, I think it's really taking that dynamic and driving it home is the critical element to it. And, you know, I think it just, it comes down to it is that thriller. So because it's a thriller, you know, you have to replace the gore with essentially, you know, parties and drugs and things like that. And I think it'd almost be like an Eyes Wide Shut moment or something like that, to where like that first second you walk into that mansion, you know, it's just, okay, this is a completely different ball game. And I think that would be almost what you would have to lead with to it. And I think for that reason, it's one of the scripts that, like, you know, more so than like The Hateful Eight, I'm curious what you think about this. Cause again, this is, I think this one by far gets one of the most requests from our community of, I want to see this, like the people who like The Invited, they want to see The Invited because they get the idea in that core concept. But I think of all of the Hateful Eight movies that we have, this one's almost an additional level up there just because of how grand the idea is. So I'm kind of curious, do you see us being able to do almost like a, you know, under million version of this, or would you even want to? I wouldn't even want to do it. I think we can do it, but my question is, would you even want to do it? Because I think this goes back to something that we talk about a ton of times is watch your genre. You know, horror can operate in a lower realm because of just the situation, but a thriller type idea like this, since you have to replace the pop scares with, you know, cool visuals, it just ends up costing a lot.
I mean, I would definitely, I think we could do it. You would need a larger budget and I wouldn't do it myself. So I would have to have a studio backing or at least some kind of production studio that we work with to take on some of the risk, because the problem is twofold with this movie. Number one, it's going to be kind of like an artsy, like A24 movie, or at least the version I have in my head where it's, it's kind of like Fear and Loathing meets Eyes Wide Shut meets, you know, some kind of movie where the person is just depressed and he has to like, almost like join the dark side, or like go into crime. It's a popular trope in a lot of stuff. So it's like a mixture of all that stuff. I just don't think it's going to sell that well. It's a little bit of a harder sell. I think it could be a really cool movie. And I think done well, it'll be, you know, it could do very, very well. But I would like to spread the risk with someone else. Because it's just, that would be a very ambitious project as far as like from the actors to the locations to the special effects. It just reminds me of the A24 movie. If we were to really pull this off, we could really push the narrative of like, all right, look, you know, if your life is really miserable, if you're really getting beat down and these people offer you like sex, drugs, and money, and they really accept you for the first time in your life, you have like this really cool family, you know, how far would you just kind of ignore these crazy things that are happening? And how far down the rabbit hole would you go? And I think that's the core concept and theme of this movie. But to pull that off properly will require a larger budget. It's going to require really good acting, and it's going to require really good screenplay. And do I think we can do it? Yes, but I don't know if it's, I think there's lower hanging fruit for us to essentially harvest before we take a look at this one, unless we work with, you know, some like HBO studios or A24 studios or some studio that really does a really good job as far as like the character development aspect of these movies and like the character motivation. Because it's going to be a character-driven movie. It's going to be more thriller suspense than like the generic horror stuff that we usually work with.
Yeah, it really is the case where, you know, I love the idea so much, but it's one of those where I kind of understand what it is. So I'm on that same page too. So that's going to go ahead and wrap up the first episode that we are doing on The Invited. We're going to do part two. We're going to pick up, we're going to meet Dimitri. We're going to have some fun for only 25 more minutes. Cause again, that is a very short runtime that we have for it. That being said though, I do want to mention, as always, you know, we absolutely love all these movies. We understand the place that they play in the development of DBS. And like I said, I absolutely love watching this movie now. So I'm very excited to hop in for part two. Again, be sure to take a look at us online. Our Discord channel is the place to be. We make movies for our fans, with our fans. So if you want to be part of this amazing process, all you got to do, go ahead and check it out. While you're there, be sure to check out The Haunting of the Murder House. Now online, Amazon Prime. We would absolutely love a review and a rental from you. But until then, have a good one.